loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot. Julius. He scores!
Anthony for three.
Bang! That one goes down, and the game is tied.
Here's Durant moving on Tucker. He turns. He shoots. Yes!
Talking Knicks, Nets, and all things across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.
Welcome, everybody, to the resident WFUV NBA podcast, Pick and Pod. I'm Chris Carino, joined by just some heavy hitters this afternoon, Owen Kelty, and of course, Joe Henry, El Jefe Joe Henry. But now, kind of recentering ourselves, I don't think I need to center you guys. It seems like, you know, you guys have been pretty dialed into this Knicks-Celtics series. We will get into that. Before that, kind of chronologically, before game four, 7 o'clock, NBA draft lottery had a lot of hype behind it. I don't know if we've had a draft lottery with this much hype. Between that and the NBA playoffs, it just feels like there's so much going on in the NBA right now. I think we'll start with the draft lottery. But first, Joe, Owen, how are you guys doing?
Brutal loss last night. That one really hurt. Went into that game really confident that they were going to win that one. Then all of a sudden that third quarter happened and I almost broke my TV remote and I had to stop watching the game. So didn't end well, but them losing guaranteed me a game. So I'm going tomorrow night. So it's like a win-win situation there.
A little silver lining. I can't even begin to explain how good I'm doing because one, I got the drink of choice in hand this morning.
Wow.
I had to make a run.
Ban Dunkin' Donuts forever.
One sip for them.
Those boys in London would just have no idea. They were just
and it's kind of sad that I know this, but there's only 4 Dunkin' Donuts in all of London. So I didn't have any when
How
I was
many
abroad.
Did, we didn't hit for, any of them. We didn't hit any of the 4.
I went to one in a train station in Berlin in mid-February, and I cherished it just as much as I cherished Banner 18. But something special about the past couple of days, as devastating as they've been for me and for all of Celtics fandom, for Jason Tatum specifically, with that injury, because, you know, we haven't seen something like that happen to a Celtics player, let alone Jason Tatum, who's an Iron Man, since maybe you could say Isaiah Thomas's hip situation, that was, you know, a travesty for our fan base. But what it does is, for the first time in a decade, it takes the pressure off of us in a way. You know, I can't remember the last time that we played a game and we weren't expected to win. It's never happened, you know, in the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown era since maybe, you know, 2018 LeBron, you know, since that series when Hayward was out, when Kyrie was out and Tatum and Brown and, you know, Terry Rozier and them had to carry, we'd been expected to win every single game. And it's great to be where expectations are high. Don't get me wrong. But it brings a certain kind of relief and freedom, and I imagine that carries over to the players, where for the first time you're playing a game and it feels like all the momentum's against you, and since your best player's out and is out in such a terrifying way, that there's no pressure anymore. And I think we saw that last night with how things played out.
Yeah, I think, and to your point, I think it's rare. I think a lot of negatives may come with that pressure of being the dominant team and the dynamic between, you know, team A and team B. And I think the Celtics obviously had been in that position for a long time as that team A, and there's negatives that come with that, whether that's pressure, whether that's, you know, the talking, a lot of talking heads behind you when you are the best team, or, you know, thought of as the best team in the NBA. But now it feels like it almost has completely shifted to the Knicks really being the team in that conversation. And it felt like the Knicks were really the team with the expectation that the Celtics have been walking around with for the last 9 months. And now, still, I'm going to ask you, Joe, because we'll stick with you, and I'm sure Owen would have opinion about this as well. Is it a dangerous place to be in a positive space for the Celtics to be maybe the team not receiving any of that negative team A pressure, but also maybe being the more talented team, even without Tatum? Like, that seems like a dangerous place to be, to almost be the underdog and still probably be the better team. That is, to me, that's a dangerous place for any team to be.
Yeah, it's a curious combination, because when you look at the roster and injuries make it so that it's kind of hard to evaluate whether the Celtics are still better than the Knicks without Tatum.
Right.
But if you look purely at the roster and don't think about, you know, the lingering issues for Jaylen Brown, Kristaps Porzingis, who got benched because according to Joe Mazzulla, he literally couldn't breathe.
Right.
Drew Holiday dealing with a hamstring, Sam Hauser's ankle. You know, virtually everyone is playing injured except for Peyton Pritchard and Al Horford. If you were to ignore those injuries, take Tatum away, you're still looking at a really, really good team, specifically if Jaylen Brown's healthy. And even with Jaylen Brown not at 100%, we saw him deliver a, you know, a 1A performance, you know,
Yeah.
playing like the best player on a good team, which is something that, you know, it's an opportunity that he hasn't really been afforded during his career, for better or for worse. And yeah, so when you combine a roster that good with a sudden dissipation of all the pressure that's been on you, and this freedom that you're playing with, because you know, it's win or go home. But if we lose, unless it's a really ugly loss, you can't really be upset given the circumstances. So it allows you this kind of freedom and looseness to play with. And then you go on MSG, where, you know, I was listening last night to Sean Grande's the Boston Celtics radio play-by-play voice after the game, and he was saying, yeah, MSG is an environment like no other in sports, and this is going to be one of the most anticipated games in the history of that building. And yes, that's a huge home court advantage, but the longer the Celtics are ever able to weather that storm and keep themselves in that game Friday, the more and more that pressure can turn against you. And the more and more intensity, anxiety, and potential boo birds could fly out if the Celtics are able to hold on to a lead in that game six and make Knicks fans who have been, you know, and no disrespect, but essentially celebrating early the past few days, and understandably so. If you're able to put them on edge, which the Celtics have a chance to do here on Friday, then you could see all chaos break loose in MSG.
Yeah, and I'm gonna get Owen involved here, because and I said we weren't gonna start Celtics Knicks. We're just gonna start Celtics Knicks because it's seemingly the only thing that we all are thinking about, rightfully so. But I going toward Owen, going back now, this was something I wanted to say at the very beginning, but there's a way to I knowing me, Owen, you know that I can spin this to where I like the Knicks are in real trouble. I could spin it that way. But just to be on it, just to be fair and honest to you. Looking at this series, if I told you, and I'm sure you've thought about this, but if I told you a week and a half ago, Owen, you're going back 3-2 to the Garden for game six, are you happy about that? You would not say no. You'd be like, absolutely, give me that every single day of the week. I would lose a finger actually to be up 3-2 going back to the Garden. But obviously, because of how expectations have gone over the last couple games, you may be feeling a little more negative. But I still think you need to kind of keep the perspective. You got to keep that humble perspective of, hey, we're in a really good position right now, and we can go do something we haven't been able to do in a really long time.
Yeah, I think looking at when you went up 3-1, you don't look at it as like you have to win it in five. Like you have three games to win one versus Celtics team without Jason Tatum. Like, you know you don't want it to go back to game seven, but you still have two more chances to win one game. And I think that's like the positive outlook on it. But last night was horrible. The way they played in the first half, and I think the whole changing point of that game was Cat getting foul trouble in the second quarter, because at the point where Cat left the game, I think they were up 9. And then he leaves the game, Celtics immediately tie it, and then it's back and forth for the rest of the half, and Cat doesn't play. And then the third quarter, and every Knick got in foul trouble in the third quarter, but and their offense was terrible, defensive rotations weren't good. So I think last night's game was very similar to game three, where they just looked like lost the entire game. Or mostly this one was only the second half where they looked lost. But I think you still can keep a positive outlook on this, because the way you look at last night's game, Derek White had 34 points. Luke Kornet had the best game of his career. Knick legend Luke Kornet, by the
Both
way.
ends of the
Yes,
floor as well,
sir.
defensively
I mean,
and
he was, oh my
offensively.
God.
I think 10 points, 9 rebounds, 8 blocks, something like
They
that. 8 blocks.
put on for the demographic of Boston, Massachusetts, right there. The what
Yeah.
he and the white boys did last
Even
night.
Peyton Pritchard. I mean, Peyton
There
Pritchard
was
was
Joe,
5
there
of
was
12
four
and
white
5
boys out there at
threes.
one point for the Celtics. I saw it. I peeped it. I was like, wow, this
Yeah.
is
I'm
very
saying the
un-Boston.
guys out in Dorchester were rowdy for
Yeah,
that.
they
I
saw
mean,
Peyton
it's
Pritchard get another
crazy.
step back three, and they were like going crazy.
I'm not even joking. I know this is like getting off topic, but
Yeah.
if you were to talk to any dad in like a 100-mile radius, and my dad's probably listening upstairs, and I, not him, but every other dad in a 100-mile radius of TD Garden, and you hear the disparity between them talking about like a Jaylen Brown and a Peyton Pritchard,
Right.
It's significant and it raises some questions.
Joe, I used to, and for the record, 2022, we play you guys in the first round. You guys sweep us. I was at both first two games in Boston that year, and I was what a senior in high school. I made the joke ad nauseum that I genuinely saw more Pritchard jerseys than Jaylen Brown jerseys at the game.
It's a
That's a problem.
stereotype
That's an
and
issue.
it's
That was before Peyton
unfortunate,
Pritchard was even
but
like Peyton Pritchard.
oh my goodness.
Yes.
Yeah. You see a Peyton Pritchard and you're like, this guy's like me. This
And
is like me.
unfortunately, because of that half court shot he made in the finals last year, it is
Like four
fair to
half
wear a
court
Peyton
shots
Pritchard
he's
jersey.
made.
Like, if you're wearing a Peyton
Absolutely.
Pritchard jersey, that's not like out of pocket. Let me, can I just read, because that was a very fair detour, but let me
Yeah,
take
reel us in.
very fair detour. And of course, Joe, your dad is not involved in that at all.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. We will not, we would never put that evil on him. Anyway, Owen, I've heard a lot of Knicks fans. This is the discourse right now, especially positive Knicks fans. The discourse is, this is a new Celtic team we played last night. It's a team that we have to get used to. And tomorrow, and for game Friday night, tomorrow night, we're gonna be ready, locked and loaded. We're gonna be fully prepared for this new Celtic team, and the game's gonna look completely different. Is that kind of your mindset on it as well? Or are you maybe not as optimistic about it?
I'm definitely, I think playing without Tatum, the Celtics looked a lot different in terms of like the way they were moving the ball.
Owen,
Like,
did they
I
look,
think their
Owen,
defense.
especially in that fourth quarter, and you just said it with ball movement, did they look
Yeah.
worse or did they look different?
They didn't, I don't think they looked different because with Tatum, I think, and Brown, the ball moved a lot
Sticks.
less. So
The ball sticks.
your defense definitely has to adjust differently because a lot of times you know Tatum's going to take a shot, you know Brown's going to ISO. And it felt like the ball's moving a lot more, which means a lot more switching for the Knicks. And it felt like they were getting lost in a lot of those switches. Mikal Bridges said after the game too, he mentioned that there was like a lack of communication on defense, which you could clearly tell. Like, guys were getting left out. Derek White, I think, probably he made seven threes. Probably four or five of those were wide open threes. So
Wide open.
I think like it's definitely a different Celtics team, and I do think they're going to adjust. But I mean, do I think like Tibbs is going to make crazy adjustments? I mean, the starting lineup that we've had all year, like statistically, is one of the worst lineups that we can run. And hasn't changed ever. Like Mitchell Robinson, I think the Knicks are being outscored without him on the floor by 62 this series. And with him on the floor, the Knicks are outscoring the Celtics by 26. It's like start Mitchell Robinson or start Deuce McBride. And Tibbs is obviously never going to change. So going into game six, I think my confidence is just in the players playing better, like OG not shooting one for 11 and Brunson not picking up 5 fouls. And hopefully, I mean, you texted me the other night, like, pray to God every single day. Thank God every day that Jalen Brunson's a Knick. It's like, he played terrible yesterday. I'm hoping that Jalen Brunson's what's going to get them the win. Like, not coaching adjustments that Jalen Brunson's going to go out there and drop 40.
Well, and I was also gonna bring up another text that we texted during the game yesterday. You made a good point that like Brunson's not gonna foul out of a game like that. Like that was a very, he doesn't even play
That
defense.
was
So like that
wild. He
was
doesn't play
very,
defense. That was him getting 5 fouls in a quarter. I was like, he doesn't play defense. I didn't know how that happened.
And I just think, yeah, and I think I sent you that text about Brunson right after he made some shot that I was just so angry that he made, because genuinely down the stretch of those games, it feels like the Celtics can keep it going, score consistently, but then Brunson, it just doesn't matter. And especially it's frustrating when a guy like Derek White plays A plus defense and it still is just
Does
almost
not matter at
irrelevant at a
all.
certain point. Joe, let me just bring this to you because I think this kind of is interesting in the Celtic conversation. Owen made a great point there about how just on ball movement alone, especially in the fourth quarter, that was kind of what I was hinting at Owen to say. I feel almost that they play better now without the isolation ball of Tatum and isolation ball of Brown. I feel like that isolation ball specifically of Tatum, I understand in game four, it was more of like a heat check nature, but especially in those first three games, it felt like he was really detrimental to them down the stretch. And I kind of liked the ball I saw better last night, to be honest with you. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a lot to unpack.
Right, sure. And to be fair, Tatum did some things in that game four in isolation situations where he was just unbelievable, to be fair.
Yeah, absolutely. And when he's shooting it well, I think you absolutely, it's an understatement to say that you live with that. But I went golfing 2 days ago, and I promise this is relevant.
I'm not gonna be the one to tell you. Do you? You're good.
I went golfing 2 days ago, and I was having a rough day out there. Jason Tatum ruptured his Achilles 13 hours prior. I can't hit a ball straight to save my life. I never have been, but especially that day. I mean, I think that's the worst I've ever played in my life. And then, I'm walking down the fairway. I should be honest, probably the left rough on hole six. And I hear these kids, playing on hole one to the left of us talking and saying, I hate to say it, but I think the Celtics are better off without him. And I was like, that's crazy.
It's
I don't know.
immature, but I kind of understand it.
It's just a casual take. I guess
Yeah.
that you could say that they're different. I don't know if you could say definitively that they're
I don't think they're
better,
better.
because I think the problems that the Celtics had this series, while you can point to Jason Tatum in games one and two, I don't think that the broader issue was a Tatum problem. The lack of ball movement is something that you saw in the 2019 Celtics, where Kyrie was shot chucking, and then everyone else, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, when they got the ball, they were just throwing up whatever long two contested, who cares, because they never got the ball.
But
And so it's
that's due to an environment dictated by whoever's running the offense. Who is running the
sure.
offense now?
No,
Tatum is
I get what
dictating
you
that
mean. I
environment.
get what you mean. But look at the stat sheet, look at a game. Actually watch it. Tatum is by far our best playmaker. He's
Yeah.
evolved into, one of the better, one of the best playmakers in the entire league, I'd say probably top 15. And he had some great looks in there. And sometimes offense, especially in the fourth quarter for the Celtics, and it's been a trend for years, but in this series it's come back to bite us. Things stagnate a lot. And Tatum was part of the problem there, but I'd like to think that whenever anyone else got the ball, Jaylen Brown in particular, but even, a Jrue Holiday or a Derek White, when they were getting the ball in this fourth quarter situations when the offense had been, stuck in ISO mode, they weren't doing a whole ton to change that. And I think that this is an offense that thrives best, as we saw last night, when people are driving and kicking. And when you talked about the volume of wide open threes was, unconscionable. And that's something that we can do, and we have done in the regular season the past 2 years, night in, night out. And so I think taking Tatum away, what it does is it simplifies your offense, where, especially with an unhealthy Jaylen Brown, most possessions isn't going to be dictated by a superstar holding the ball because he's the best guy to get a shot. It's a full team effort where everyone understands that ISO ball isn't going to get you buckets. And when the Celtics are able to get into a rhythm, and it's worth noting that for parts of the game, especially early, like end of first, second quarter, they've started to stagnate a lot, and we saw them fall into that pattern. But from the second half onwards, when you see them get into that rhythm where they're passing up good looks for great looks,
Yeah.
then they really get rolling, and we saw what happens. And the key looking at it is going to be how well are they able to continue that fluid, continuous rhythm on offense into game six.
And
I
I
think,
think also the
yeah,
ability to
go on.
hit shots. If you look at like the Celtics lineup last night, like everyone, I think everyone could agree on this. Every single player that played exceptionally well. And when like you have Tatum, you can rely on him like when they're playing bad to step up. So like looking at these next two games, I think you have to say like if they had Tatum, he can step in and hit those big shots. But now you need every single player to have good, like you need Pritchard to step up every game. You need Derek White to drop 30 probably every single game. Like with Tatum,
And you need,
that you're getting that.
yeah, and you need Luke Kornet to,
Doing,
not have what he did last night every
but
game, but
I almost
something
think you
close
guys
to
are
it.
over. You guys are over almost overestimating that. You guys named like so many players. Like I felt last night with the Knicks when Brunson fouled out, the game was over because Bridges had to run the offense, and he what like that was just wasn't going to be a like
Bridges,
not even that,
no one was hitting shots, I think,
but
for the
not
Knicks
even
too
from
last
the
night.
like I hate Bridges. Like this is just me, like NBA. Like that's just not how you're gonna produce points, especially down the stretch. And to your point, Joe, I do think I agree with almost everything you said, Joe, but I do think certain installments, especially in the fourth quarter, that fluidity of scoring offensively is almost more beneficial than whatever Tatum is doing. Like, especially in game, I think it was game two or game three. I'm like, we should sub in Pritchard and take out Tatum. Like, we would be like,
It's
we'd
we
actually
now.
help ourselves.
We is
You're
crazy.
we. Yeah.
We
We.
is
Crazy
wild.
we. That's unreal
Joe,
hate. It's
first, and
we.
this is just,
From
this
New
is just,
Jersey.
this is a tidbit right now. If you guys saw me and my father in our living room watching these games, we would be you guys would be so unimpressed by me saying we are so in on Boston. And me and my dad are not, we
So your
are,
dad also hates the Knicks as much as you
oh,
do.
as much as I do. Yes.
Okay.
He just, he's a professional and, there's many, he's not as emotional or animated as I am, but
Yeah, okay.
nonetheless, We still are very much passionate about this Celtic team. And also, from a certain perspective, I like this Celtic team a lot. I like the ball movement. I like how they play as a team. There's a certain championship sparkle they have, especially late in the fourth quarter when, like Joe's saying, they're passing up good shots for great shots. And also, I just love a team that down the stretch, when they need the stops, they get them. I don't know necessarily, we haven't really seen the Knicks. We've seen the Knicks in comebacks when they're really scoring quickly, they can get the stops on the other end. But when the game stagnates, I think last night it was 91-76, like around the top of the fourth quarter, the Celtic defense just shut down the Knicks, and they weren't even scoring. That's something that I think like only championship teams can really do, and that's just more evidence. So I think this Celtic team is just going to continue rolling. Thoughts?
I mean, I think in that third quarter, really, like the Knicks, all like you talk about their offense, like they got killed, especially with the Celtics going to the line so much. All your momentum, every time there's a stoppage
Right.
in play, I think getting into the bonus early really helped the Celtics and having all those free throws. Like the Knicks' offense did not do well in that third quarter. It looked like stagnant every single play. The Celtics, and I don't even know if that was the defense was good, but the ball movement on the Knicks side, it was like the Celtics shot two free throws, and then coming down the other side of the court, it was like Josh Hart screen for Jalen Brunson. Shot clock runs down, someone make a play. It's like it just looked like, and then the Celtics come down and shoot free throws. It's like they looked lost in the third quarter. So I think this constant stoppage really helped out like the Celtics defense, and Knicks just looked lost.
And
I agree.
you're part of Celtic Nation, Joe. So I'm gonna get your insight on this. But that third quarter, the first half, it felt like there were a lot of Knicks fans in TD Garden. That was maybe the most away fans I had heard at a Celtic game, maybe ever. Like the Deuce McBride was very loud. And then in that third quarter, I don't know if it was animosity or anger on the part of Boston fans. They're so angry that all the New Yorkers were there. There was like a roar in that third quarter. They were so loud in that third quarter. Can you just talk about how this city in that moment felt about their team and kind of now going toward game six, how does Boston feel about this team? I know you had that, you gave the kind of talk about maybe what people feel about Tatum, but what's the actual feel about this roster that's out there?
Well, it's a lot to unpack. First of all, I was there game two, and the Knicks contingent was surprising. TD Garden, you usually think of it the opposite way. When Boston travels to Orlando or to Washington or to Utah, the majority oftentimes of that crowd is wearing green. And you very rarely see the
Brooklyn.
opposite
I
happen
appreciate you
in
not
TD
saying
Garden.
Brooklyn. Thank you. Not thank you for not saying
Didn't even
Brooklyn.
come to mind.
Thank
Didn't even
you.
come to mind.
Now
Especially
Brooklyn.
we haven't outsold we haven't outsold Celtic fans at a game in Brooklyn in maybe like 3 or 4 years, but I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, we pride ourselves in being the team that will come to your arena and show out. And so it was a little surprising, I'll be honest, when I got there and saw the volume of Knicks fans there. And that was certainly true for a game five that felt to many like a game where you were going to maybe wave the white flag. But as time went on and there's a mixture of this, it's all anger. But it's sourced from different things. There's the Tatum injury, the fact that you're losing 3-1 in a series that everyone expected you to win, and the fact that there's a lot of Knicks fans making a lot of noise and acting like they've already won this thing. And again, no disrespect to Knicks fans, and I'm not trying to generalize,
It's fair.
but
They
in
were
the
fair.
stadium,
It's fair for them to react that way.
absolutely, absolutely. When you combine all three of those factors, it creates this special kind of will for your team that I don't think the Celtics fan base has seen because they've been so conditioned to expect you to win since maybe the Isaiah Thomas era or maybe the Jason Tatum rookie era when they went up against LeBron. And the expectation is this team, as imperfect as it is, can will you to victory. And we've got this emotional backing too. If you think about those Isaiah Thomas years with everything that he was going through and all the odds stacked against him as someone who's, 5'9 on a good day to be doing what he did for the city of Boston, it feels in a way like that spirit's back. And as someone who's watched almost every Celtics game for the past decade, I don't know if I've felt this level of pride and intensity and anxiety over my team in a good way since those days. And it's a special feeling, and I'm just hoping that we could perhaps extend this to game seven, as difficult as it may be, because I don't think the Knicks are going to deliver a repeat performance, especially in their own building, which is as good a home court advantage as TD or anywhere. But
Perfect,
if they
perfect. Yeah.
can,
I mean, they also haven't closed out in that building since 1999. So, you
Also,
got to
wait,
remember
let me and I
that.
was gonna part that was a great parlay joke because I was gonna go into game six and what that environment feels like for you, Owen, because you will be there. But also, I have to just say this because I think it's maybe my favorite stat of all time. The last time the Knicks won a championship, Spike Lee wasn't old enough to drink alcohol. That's
He's
fantastic.
like five.
That is fantastic. You're 70. What do you what? 71.
Oh, so he's
Aren't you a
18.
Knick fan? What is this?
What am I Googling Spike Lee's age on my free time?
No, I'm just saying though. Like, anyway, my point is, I
Well,
just
Stephen A was five. Stephen A was
I
five.
know Joe Henry loved it. Stephen A. Smith, graduate of Fashion Institute of Technology in Manhattan. I have a question for you, kind of. Obviously, I'm going to ask Joe because it's kind of the same thing he was just talking about. Because I think all the emotions that he just spoke about are going to be amplified of a maybe game seven. That would be a wild, just that would be just a scene. But for game six, it felt like, oh, and the game four crowd was the crowd to like, we're going to go to have fun. Like, we feel like we're the better team and we feel like we're going to beat this team. We're going to go have fun. It does not feel like that tomorrow. Tomorrow feels like it's going to be maybe a little more of a quieter crowd than we're used to, just out of anxiety. And they're going to need the Knicks to really show them something before they really start losing their minds.
So I feel like when you look at the game three and game four crowd, the game three crowd was terrible. I think the second the Celtics went up big in that game, the crowd was out of it. The game four crowd, I'd say, was like the best crowd of the playoffs so far. They were in it the whole game. Knicks even went down, they were still in it. I'm a little worried about tomorrow. The cheapest ticket is $900. The NJ Transit's going to be down all day potentially. So think about how much of your fan base is coming from New Jersey. So who knows how those people will be able to get there. Traffic's gonna be horrible in the city. Little concerned because, I mean, the ticket prices are horrible. I mean, when you look at why there were so many Knicks fans in Boston, it's cheaper to go to Boston, stay in a hotel, go to the game,
Pay for the
and
Amtrak
come
ticket,
back,
the
and
whole thing.
you're paying less money than going to a Knicks game to sit at the top of the stadium. So, I think a lot of fans probably. I mean, if you bought tickets way before the playoffs started and thought, game six or home game three or whatever. Of round two, I think it'll be a good crowd. I think it'll be interesting though, because a lot of those fans who are going to be there might not be like the realist fans that, like, if the Knicks go down 10 early in that game, I do think, like what Joe said, there could be some boo birds. I think if you're having like genuine fans that go to games 1 through 8, 41, whatever it is, home games, I don't think there'd be boos. I think they'd know that this team can come back from anything, which we've seen in this series, but it'll be interesting. I think. At the start, they'll be really fired up. So that's how important it is the Knicks to get off to a good start in this game. If they get off to an early start, get up 10, try to keep all that momentum going, keep it close the whole game. I think the crowd will be into it. But I think if they go down, it could get a little ugly, especially with how high these ticket prices are. People start to take out their anger that they just spent $1,000 to see the Knicks go down early in a game.
I like a lot of what you were just saying, to be honest with you. I liked a lot of what you were just saying, but kind of just kind of putting a main idea center on this, just kind of looking at tomorrow's game specifically. We obviously can get into game seven. I think, Joe, we know that crowd would just be absolutely insane in Boston just for so many reasons. That crowd would just be out of their minds, but they need to get there first. And that game tomorrow, I'll also give my prediction first. I think the Celtics win again tomorrow. I think it's close the whole way. It's the closest game we've seen in the series so far. I don't think either team has more than a 5-point lead the entire way. And I think in the end, just through sheer ball movement and just sheer kind of team basketball, the Celtics pull through down the stretch. And we have a game seven in Boston on what, Monday? Monday.
It would be Monday
Monday.
night.
Yeah. But I'll
Yeah.
start with you, Joe.
Well, my heart obviously says Boston. My head is pretty torn. It probably leans New York. I just think you have that. It's almost to make it a metaphor, like when you sustain an injury doing something where you have a lot of adrenaline, that adrenaline keeps you up for a little bit and you almost feel even better. And then you come crashing down. And my concern is that, and we'll see it, it's important to watch very closely this first quarter. If the Celtics are able to sustain the energy that they had Wednesday into Friday, because it's one thing to rally behind a cause and behind a tragedy, because that's what it was for Boston for one game, but to sustain that when your team is, obviously looking a lot different than it has for 95% of the games that you've played in the past 7, 8 years, there's a big hump to overcome there. But I think if the Celtics are able to keep it close, it's going to come down to crunch time once more. The advantage has obviously been in the hands of Jalen Brunson and the Knicks. And that's why I have a lot of trouble picking the Celtics. That said, this is a Celtics team that has been here before, that has won a championship the year prior, that has guys like Jrue Holiday and Al Horford who have plenty of playoff experience, especially down towards the end of games. Derek White's another name you could throw out there. Jaylen Brown. These are guys that historically have performed quite well in the clutch. And while they haven't really shown up this series in those less than 5 minutes within 5 points situations, you still have to like their chances to deliver a better product than we did games 1 through 4 when things got close down the stretch, or games 1, 2, and 4. So I lean Knicks a little bit. I'm obviously going to pick the Celtics because I like the Celtics. But I think the two things to watch for are how the Celtics are able to start this game in an enemy environment and coming off of, with having that injury from Tatum settle in a little bit more. And also how well they're able to perform in the crunch time. Because as you said, Chris, I do think this is a close game. And I think it's going to be defined by which team is able to execute better down the stretch in the fourth.
And just as a tiny tidbit, Joe, how much green are we going to see tomorrow, you think?
I mean, the tickets being what they
So
are,
much money.
it's difficult, and it raises another issue, which you touched upon, Owen. When ticket prices are so expensive, the question is how legitimate are these fans? Because most of the best, rowdiest, most excited fans for a playoff game or for any game are the people who don't have a ton of money. These are everyday people. If you look in, Miami or the Bay Area, and look at a lot of the people who are lining the front rows of those games, it's people with a ton of money who maybe aren't as rowdy of fans as your everyday Knicks folks. And to credit New York, I think that they kind of, despite being such an expensive market, are able to elude that often. But it's something I'd be a little bit concerned about. And of course, in a game as contentious as this, as close as this, or as hyped up as this, you'd expect some green to be in there. But I would expect the Knicks to firmly hold the advantage still. I don't think it's going to be a factor, the Celtics, contingent there. But it's definitely interesting to think about how the prices of tickets are going to impact the quality of your atmosphere.
And I feel like the ticket, I feel like if the tickets have been a problem for like 4 years, like I think it's almost
Ever since the
semantical.
only good playoff run where it was like relatively was the Hawks one when it was their first time in the playoffs forever, those were reasonable priced, and then like the Sixers series last year was all right. Like it was
But
like
even to my point, like the point I'm making is like I feel like it's been a problem for a long time, and I still feel like this will be the only time I give Knicks fans a compliment. It's by far the smartest crowd when you watch on TV. Like by far. Like they'll cheer for very like small, intricate things that like a crowd in Indiana might not cheer for. You know what I mean? So I think even with people getting priced out, the people who are getting priced in, I think, are also still bad, like ball people at heart, I think. And also, Dave Portnoy, courtside next to Chalamet last night. I don't think I've ever seen Portnoy at Madison Square Garden. Can he get to, can I, can we like GoFundMe
I don't
him
think he's
tomorrow?
at least in the last couple of years, I don't think he's ever been courtside.
That's no, but yeah, he was courtside last night. I remember
He's
he
up
was
behind
courtside in
Tibbs.
Miami. Like he'll be courtside, but not at MSG. That would be for him next to Spike. That they should make a whole documentary about that. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Nonetheless, Owen, we've waited long enough. The resident Knick beat reporter, the man who's going to cover the game tomorrow. What's the final prediction?
So I think the Knicks end up going up big early. I think they go up 20 probably in the first half. Then they end up blowing it in the third quarter. Hey, stick with me here. I think they go up big in the first half. They blow it in the third quarter, and then the fourth quarter comes down to the same way it's been the last couple series. And I'm gonna go with Jalen Brunson on this one. Obviously, I'm gonna take the Knicks to win. I think he ends up having 40 plus. He's in his game sixes, I think, in his career, he's averaging 36 points. Closeout game at the Garden. I trust him. I do think they end up going up big early. They blow it though. Classic Knicks always want to make it close at the end. But I think the third quarter is the third quarter of doom and despair for them. Has been all year. So I think the third quarter is going to be rough. But in the end, I think the Knicks pull through. I don't think they want to go back to Boston. That'd be a recipe for disaster. But Jalen Brunson, I think, is going to come through, especially after fouling out last game. I think he's going to come out looking to be way more aggressive. We'll see, like similar to what we saw in game four from him. And I think the Knicks come through with this one. Close game, though, at the end. I'd say they win by less than five, but I think it's gonna be one of those games where like the whole series has been a game of runs. I think the Knicks get out early, but then the Celtics end up clawing their way back. But I'm sticking with the Knicks on this one. I think they close it out at the Garden. First time since 1999. I think a lot of things would get destroyed outside, probably.
And it would definitely be a destructive night if that was to be the case. Tomorrow night, Friday night at Madison Square Garden on ESPN, the New York Knicks hosting the Boston Celtics in a game that they can take all the way to the conference finals. I haven't been able to say that, just as Owen said, since 1999. And we don't have a ton of time. I wanted to touch on NBA lottery. We're not going to get to touch on it very much. I think Joe, and Joe, you would know this better than me. We are trying to maybe do a show for the draft, possibly, maybe in the works, trying to still figure that out, along with Brendan Schori maybe coming on some pick and pod coming up to the draft as well. Our resident Dallas Maverick fan has to be excited about how that went, by the way. We could touch on it very briefly, but to maybe implode your franchise and then the chosen one immediately just comes into your arms. It doesn't feel, I don't like to say rigged. It isn't rigged. I know for a fact it isn't, but still, it just feels fishy and
No
annoys me.
doubt.
And
No
annoys me.
doubt. It does feel fishy. I also agree. I don't think it's actually rigged. But I think the bigger issue is think about why the lottery is in place. I'd say there's two reasons primarily. Number one is to incentivize teams not to tank. It's crazy in the NFL that if you go 0-18, you're virtually guaranteed the number one pick, unless someone else decides to go 0-18. The fact that you can literally just tank, right? So it's great that the NBA has a lottery for that reason. The other reason is to make sure that teams that have small markets and that aren't able to secure big name free agents, because a lot of these teams, they're never going to be in the running for superstars. It gives them the opportunity to develop, to draft and develop the next generation of superstars. And year after year, we've seen that not happen. And curiously enough, it's been the teams that you'd most kind of want a player to be on that have secured the first overall pick. It
And
fits so well that the Spurs get Wembanyama. The Mavericks are a big market team that have been catching a
been in
ton
the
of
finals
flack
last year.
and that
Been
are
making some
in
flag.
need of a new superstar to develop after their last two
And I'm going to
are
defend
able to get the
myself
next
before I get
generation of guy.
attacked, Joe, because I just see Owen Kelty's face getting happier and happier. And I'm just going to defend myself before I get attacked. I have every NBA MVP here listed. Let me go through the ones that were drafted in the top five and the ones that weren't drafted in the top five. Ready? Jokic, not top five. Embiid, top five. Jokic, not top five. Jokic, not top five. Antetokounmpo, not top five. Antetokounmpo, not top five. James Harden, not top five. Curry, not top five. Curry, not top five. Durant, top five. LeBron, top five. Rose, top five. James, top five. Again, James. And then Kobe, not top five. Dirk, not top five. That feels, and I'm just going to make, I just to make the point, I understand there's really great players at the top of the draft, but if you have confidence in your general managing and your just front office in general, there is so much value outside of those first couple picks. You really just need to find them. And I think that is maybe the biggest misconception about just recruiting and drafting in the NBA total. Owen, do you have a rebuttal for that? If you just say Con Canepl, I'm going to be angry.
I was actually about to say Con Canepl, so I won't say it exactly, but I mean, I think the Wizards by far deserve the first overall pick. They didn't tank this year. I think they were
Shout
just
out Joe Masters.
genuinely,
Shout out
yeah,
Joe
they were
Masters.
genuinely awful, and they got the eighth overall pick. So I think that really sucks for them. I think it's a little bit of a flawed system, but
I have the eighth overall pick.
I mean, oh, they've what they have seven then?
I think
They
they
have
have
seven or
seven,
six.
yeah.
I mean, they were genuinely awful this year and they didn't get it. So I think that really sucks. I'm happy the Nets didn't get it. Almost crashed my car out of excitement listening to it on the radio when I heard the Nets had the eighth pick. So yeah, I mean, Dallas gets a new superstar. San Antonio gets Dylan Harper after getting Victor, which is
We'll
insane to think
see.
about.
We'll see. And I'm gonna parlay. We're back with just a slight intermission there. We got caught up during our Spurs talk. I wanted to kind of talk about that. I wanted to get it at least talked about a little bit. I think the Spurs have easily the most pivotal kind of spot here because I think the Spurs can go in two directions. And Ryan Russillo talked about this, I think, yesterday. They're very much in a place where they could go win now. They have the assets to go do it, whether they trade that second pick along with guys like Vessel. There's a few other things that if you pair it along with a guy like De'Aaron Fox, Wemby, Castle, you could go win right now. You may be putting a bit of an expiration date on Wemby's first prime because those guys are going to age. Those guys are going to get older. Wemby's going to need new teammates. You might kind of be putting a cap on that. And maybe Derek Harper is the perfect kind of wingman for him. They're in a very pivotal spot to go in multiple directions right now. How do you guys see the Spurs situation? What do you think is maybe the most beneficial move for them going forward? Start with
I
you, Juan,
think
or Joe, whoever wants to go.
I'll go briefly. I
Gotcha.
think they have a good problem on their hands. I mean, you
Yes.
talk about guys potentially aging. It's still overall a pretty young, quite young team. So I think regardless of what they do, they'll get better. And I'm eager to see what they do. I don't think I have a super strong opinion as to whether they want to trade down, trade out entirely, create a package, as you said, with a guy like Vassell, and get, a more, a higher tier superstar player. Or if they want to go in the draft where, yeah, Cooper Flagg's a generational guy, but when you look down the line, guys like Harper, Bailey, there's still plenty of guys that are total game changers for you. So it's difficult for me to say which route would be better for them. I'd have to think about it more and try and see like what kind of trade package they could do. Because I don't know, people make rumors about someone like Giannis. Obviously, they could try and put something together that, like, with that, they're one of only a few teams that has, the personnel to do that, and probably the cap as well. But I'm not sure how feasible that is, or even if that is the wise decision, because you'd probably want Wemby to be your 1A. But regardless of whether they choose to trade or to select someone here, I think that they're in a good situation. And I think that's the bottom line. Regardless of what they do, I trust El Jefe and company to make the right call here.
Yeah, Owen, you go too, but I do think the value of the ping pong balls this year, maybe more than ever, because the Spurs did not see the, find themselves, they were not going to be in this position they find themselves in now if it wasn't a miraculous kind of upping up the charts. I know the Nets praying to get a top four pick. They thought with the top four pick in this year's draft, they really thought they could have a haul to give to Milwaukee. Now that's kind of out of play, whether that's better for the Nets going forward or not. It's a whole separate conversation. But similarly to that situation, it feels like San Antonio is even more pivotal. Owen, do you think Derek Harper is like, do you think that's smart to kind of just pair it, especially you have the last two rookie of the years already on your roster? Or do you think this is the time to go get that depth and go become a contender?
I mean, I think you stick and pick Dylan Harper there. He,
Jersey.
yeah, Rutgers guy, Jersey guy. What's Giannis now? 30, 29,
30.
30. Wemby's what? 21.
Yeah.
Like, I think you're
Or 20.
really,
Is he 21? He might just turn 21
might
now.
have
He's
just
so
be
young.
20. He's
He's very
still
young.
like, that's such a big difference, I think, between like your 1A and then your like 1B. I think you look at, especially the way Giannis's game is, maybe he only has like 4 years left of being an elite player. I mean, who knows how he'll age. I think you stick and pick Dylan Harper and just continue to build like an elite young core, and you wait for maybe another young superstar to become available in the next couple of years, whoever it may be. Like, I think Giannis is more towards a team that's ready to contend. I think the Spurs can be a playoff team with Harper, De'Aaron Fox, Stephon Castle, Devin Vassell. I mean, they still have a lot of pieces. They can, I think, t make that pick and still make a good trade. I mean, they still have the four, what is it, the 14th pick. I think you could package that 14th pick, maybe a couple of the other young guys, and get another good player besides Giannis, like another space, like shooter on the floor. I don't think Giannis is the way for them to go. I think you stick and pick and take a guy who is a really high ceiling at guard, really young, only 18 or 19 years old. I think you stay and take that pick and continue building a young core, because like I don't think rushing it's the right answer. I think if you get Giannis, you're really putting a timetable and when you want to win that first championship, which would be in
Yes.
the next 4 years. And I think you don't really want to do that, especially with Wemby hasn't shown that he can play a full season yet and playoffs. I think you want to build this thing the right way and do it slowly. Because if Wemby ends up getting hurt, or I mean, he only played like 50 something games this year, I think 60 something his rookie year. I think you just let him kind of do it the right way and continue building him up, especially as someone that tall and that good. You don't want to have to be like, all right, well, we need to win now in 4 years. So I
Right.
think you stay and make that pick and continue building it.
And the Spurs have always had that patience about them. They're not really a team that, would be impatient and jump the shark or anything of that nature. It seems like a team that has always been run in a pretty sufficient way. I do, as we wrap this up, one more thing to talk about. Another year of the lottery where the number one pick does not go to one
Seven
of the three
straight.
teams with the highest odds. It seems to be an issue, whether it's an issue of these teams not being rewarded the way they should be, but also the kind of caveat of maybe it's also curbing tanking in a from a certain perspective as well. when the odds were too high, people said there was too much value in the tank, and now people are saying there's no value in the tank. Where is the Goldilocks, you know, too hot, too cold, just right? Where could that, what could that look like for the combine or for the lottery in general?
It's so tricky. Like,
Yeah.
you want cheating or cheating, tanking to not be incentivized,
Right.
but you also want teams that are bad to be able to jumpstart a rebuild. And there's
Yes.
no better way to do that, in my opinion, especially if you're a small market team, than getting a potential, you know, a Cooper Flagg or a Derek Harper or an Ace Bailey. That said, given, you know, 7 years in a row, that literally defies the odds. But then again, when you look closer and you see you could go 0-82 and your chance of getting the number one overall pick is 14%. If you go 0-18 in the NFL, your chances of landing the number one overall pick are like 99.9 unless another team goes 0-18, right? That's a disparity that's pretty egregious. I think a lot of that's on the NFL, but I would be intrigued to see the NBA kind of tinker with these odds. 14% is still quite low. I don't think you could you definitely couldn't go higher than 20, but clearly 14% is not done enough
I think it
to get some
was.
of these
They
teams.
changed it 7 years ago. I think it was 20
It was
before they changed.
25 at one
It was
point.
25 because when they changed it 7 years ago, it was because the tanking was so like
So
egregious.
egregious, yeah.
And then they changed it, and that was the year the Knicks won like 14 games and didn't get the first pick. That was the first year of the new lottery system.
Yeah.
So, but 14 still is.
I would like for them to find a middle ground there.
And I just thought of this while you were talking, Joe, but I feel like the whole conversation is always like, oh, we're going to rank who deserves it the most. And the conversation should always be like, who deserves it the most? Shouldn't they just like the MVP just like vote on it? Like top bottom 10 teams, you give 200 coaches, media, and players the vote, and then everyone just ranks them out of 10 of who deserves it the most. The team with the most votes gets ranked out of 10. That's the lottery order. Like I don't
It's
that would almost
so
make more sense because it can't be
you
biased. You
cannot
have
do
every
that.
team voting on it.
Because then you
You
always say
cannot
this thing
do
is like all
that.
NBA, there's people with bias.
I know, but
There's
you could almost
bias, but
make
it's
it to where you can only vote. You can't vote for your team. Like you could put caveats to where it would really be the team that deserves it the most.
I don't agree with that because it's so the
So
stakes are
silly.
so amplified compared to awards voting. An award at the end of the day, as important
Yeah.
as it is an award. The lottery is that's a chance to change your franchise. And even if you're not allowed to vote for your own team, think about, you know, if I'm the GM of the Boston Celtics,
You don't want the Knicks getting
76ers are getting ranked last.
right.
They are. And the Lakers are getting ranked right down there with them. The Knicks are probably next in line. And that's
Right.
happening every single year.
Right.
Like, there's still this incentive to cheat out your rivals and to maybe, you know, I'm Wizards, you can have the number one overall, but Utah Jazz, you're not even in my conference. I
Right.
would absolutely pick the Utah Jazz to get the number one overall pick because I
Right.
want teams that don't pose any threat to me to get it. And
I'm more
so,
just speaking
do
of a
they
place. I
deserve
wish
it
there was a
more?
way to unbiasedly rank these teams on how much they deserve it, like just so the people who really deserve it get it. And I don't know how would we do that? Because if it's the really who deserves it, it wouldn't be the best team. So it wouldn't be like we'd have a play-in at the end of the year. We wouldn't have like a tournament they'd play in at the end of the year because that team wouldn't win. And like I just feel like there's so many caveats that I don't know. I don't know how to get it just right. Like the Goldilocks in the middle just seems so specific that we haven't found it yet.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at like, I think also like the top eight picks, like going from like stopping at Brooklyn, like how many of those teams like realistically were tanking this year? I think you'd say Utah probably Utah, but I mean, Dallas got injured, San Antonio lost Wemby, Philly was definitely tanking, Charlotte lost LaMelo almost the whole year, Utah definitely tanking, Washington just stunk, but they definitely were trying. New Orleans was injured out. Like everyone was injured, and Brooklyn wasn't even trying to tank. They were trying to win as many games as possible. So I think, like,
Yeah.
is tanking really a problem, or is it just a talent like discrepancy?
And the Nets almost screwed themselves over because they traded for their pick back and gave Houston the
Yeah,
Suns
that's the
pick, and
10th pick.
that pick ended up being 10. If that pick was higher than the Nets pick, that would have been like literally disaster for Sean Marks.
And I guess Toronto, I mean, they were injured too, but they just weren't that good. Like, I feel like
Toronto
it's
was.
less of a tanking problem and more of a like the talent, like that Charlotte, Washington really can't compete right now.
No.
Like Washington has a bunch of young players, some vets on that roster. I mean, Jordan Poole, NBA champion. I mean, I know he's not great, but like it wasn't like they were going out there every night trying to lose. They were just genuinely a horrible team. Same with Charlotte. LaMelo was hurt. I mean, the only team that I really think was tanking was Utah. And I mean, like, so like
I think Washington was tanking for
I
sure.
mean, they could have been better. Like, they could have signed more free agents, but who was going to sign them? They
They
played.
were beating us in a game and then they pulled their starters for the fourth quarter. That like happened this year.
End of the season. Yeah, I mean,
Like
they.
that's just them trying to lose the
Yeah.
game.
But I think, like, realistically, I don't know if it's just like these teams aren't, they don't have enough talent, I think, to compete.
No.
Like, Dallas was good enough. Like, them getting the first overall pick, San Antonio. I mean, the Sixers definitely at the end of the season were trying to lose.
And
Were
I
they?
think when you stockpile all, like after just being in the lottery for so many years, I think almost Portland is a real testament to the lottery working because they have been in a rebuild for the last 3 or 4 years. But if you look at that roster, there's so many good players. Like they are loaded with young talent. So I
Just have
think
to piece it together.
it's just going to be a stockpiling. Yeah. And then just kind of how you're able to piece that all together. Any kind of final thoughts on the lottery? I know we're going to draft. We can kind of, there'll be a little more time to get into that. But anything just on the lottery specifically? Overall, we're all good.
I'm good. I mean, I do think that it needs to have a little bit of an amendment,
Yeah, I agree.
given what we've seen results-wise. But your point is well made about is tanking even an issue anymore? To the extent of, I think the lottery odds might be a bigger issue than tanking at this point. I think
True.
it's done well enough to discourage teams from intentionally losing, but has it rewarded teams that just need talent and simply aren't as good? I don't think it has.
I
And
mean, I also think maybe a fix would be less teams in the lottery. I mean, 14, like you could do top six worst teams, then you're guaranteed a top six pick.
I
And
like
then
that.
it's odds with that. I mean, 14's a lot. Last 2 years, the team has been in outside the top 10 has gotten the lottery.
Or the
So I think
lottery
you
has
could,
tiers. Like you're
yeah,
in the
you can
top
only move
five
up so
tier.
far.
Yeah, you're in the 5 through 10. You're in the 10 through 14. I kind of like that.
I do
Like,
too.
I think having the ability to move up from 8 to 1 or even fall down from 1 to 5 or 6 and 7 for the Washington and Pelicans, I think like they shouldn't, like if you're that bad, you shouldn't have to be able to fall more than 5, I think.
And if you just get into the lottery, like Dallas or like New Orleans with Zion, like you really shouldn't have a chance at that guy.
Yeah, especially like the last 2. I mean, the Hawks won it with Risha Share. They had like a one, I think they had the lowest odds ever to win the lottery. And then this year it's 1.8%. So I think if you're barely missing the play-in, you shouldn't have a chance at the first overall pick.
That's exactly, yeah. And
I agree.
I that tier system, that might be it. We might have to. Someone call Ryan Gregory. We might have to get him on the phone.
Get
We
him
gotta
on, get him
get
in meeting
Silver.
with Silver.
We gotta get in a room with Tatum and Silver stat. But anyway, I think that's pretty much our show wrapped up. A very pivotal Pippin Pick and Pod episode. Pick a very pivotal game in New York tomorrow. Make sure to follow Owen Kelty on Twitter. He'll be following that game and covering that game all day long tomorrow. You're gonna be getting there, right? Even with the NJ Transit trouble.
We'll figure it. We'll if
We'll
there's a
always
will,
figure it
there's a
out.
way. We'll figure it out.
We'll
We'll be
always
there
figure it
early.
out. But anyway, Owen Kelty on Twitter. Follow him 8 o'clock tomorrow night at Madison Square Garden, Knicks versus Celtics. We'll see. Both someone in this Zoom is gonna be really upset, and two guys are gonna be really happy, or the other way around. We will see. Time will truly tell. But for now, I'm Chris Carino, our boss, Joe Henry, Owen Kelty, for now, saying thank you for watching, of course, and have a great rest of your day.